Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I mean, I don't know if there is or not. I don't know. I never thought about it. You know, maybe I'm off, but I don't know. Nothing comes to the forefront of my mind.
You don't call them sinners?
I never thought about it, but I probably don't.
Give us some men who know the truth and who will declare the truth and who will declare from the housetops that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Why is there no peace in the Middle East, specifically Israel?
One side wants the other side dead. Israel wants to exist as a Jewish state and to live in peace. Israel also recognizes the right of Palestinians to have their own state and to live in peace.
The other side, not so much. This is Wretched Radio. Dennis Prager, really one of... Just like Dennis Prager so much. Such a likable fellow. I always like it when he appears on one of the talking head shows. He is a... not Orthodox Jew. He would not say that. He is a Reformed Jew. I think he's become less conservative over the years. Just the same. This is a fellow who pretty much takes his faith seriously. And he's a super smart guy. Giving a little lesson on what's going on in the Middle East as we see more rockets firing through the air, as we see more people dying and more bad reporting. Do you know, by the way, when Jewish people send a missile into Gaza, where Muslims are living, that they warn them in advance? Do you realize that? It's a very sophisticated system. It lets people know in advance, we're going to be bombing, get out of the way. Why do they do such a thing? Well, they're civilized. Second of all, they realize, and this is part of the reason for the high mortality rate of Muslims in this present skirmish, is because Muslims hide themselves in the general populace, behind children. And so when you hear reports, all of these children are dying, the Jews are killing Muslim children. No, they're not. Muslims are killing Muslim children because the Jews warned them the missiles are coming. Did you know that? Perhaps this little presentation from Dennis Prager will bring you up to speed on just what exactly is the at least recent history of this little land we do not call Palestine, we call Israel.
The problem, however, is that most Palestinians and many other Muslims and Arabs do not recognize the right of the Jewish state of Israel to exist. This has been true since 1947, when the United Nations voted to divide the land called Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jews accepted the United Nations partition, but no Arab or any other Muslim country accepted it.
I read another one last week. I believe Egypt had offered up some sort of peace treaty. Egypt. No, said the Palestinians, if you will. I don't like that name because I don't think there is a Palestine. I think it's Israel, period. But to use the nomenclature of the media and Muslims, they said, no, the Muslims didn't want a peace treaty. The Jews were like, yes, we want a peace treaty. We want this to stop because they like life. They don't like death. They don't like war. And they don't engage in war unless they are picked on. I just heard somebody stating, everybody's complaining that the Jews are trying to kill the Muslims. Imagine this scenario. If New Jersey started firing on New York, would you blame New York for trying to defend herself? Of course not. And that's what's going on. The Muslims have been attacking Israel, and they're simply trying to defend themselves. If the Jewish people didn't want the Muslims in Gaza, they could have had that land a long time ago, but they gave it up. Why? Because Jews historically want peace.
When British rule ended on May 15, 1948, the armies of all the neighboring Arab states, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Transjordan, and Egypt, attacked the one-day-old state of Israel in order to destroy it. But to the world's surprise, the little Jewish state survived. Then it happened again. In 1967, the dictator of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, announced his plan, in his words, to destroy Israel. He placed Egyptian troops on Israel's border, and armies of surrounding Arab countries were also mobilized to attack. However, Israel preemptively attacked Egypt and Syria. Israel did not attack Jordan and begged Jordan's king not to join the war. But he did. And only because of that did Israel take control of Jordanian land, specifically the West Bank of the Jordan River.
Only because of that. History is quite clear on this. Very clear. You really have to mangle it. You have to be unaware of some basic information to think for a moment that this is an issue where the Muslims have had no blood on their hands. It is the Jews, these horrible Jews. The UN recognized them as a nation. What are we going on, 70 years now? Recognize them as a nation. One day old, all of the surrounding countries attacked them. Modern miracle, they won. And to the victor typically go the spoils. But did the Jews keep all the spoils? No.
Shortly after the war, the Arab states went to Khartoum, Sudan, and announced their famous three no's. No recognition, no peace, and no negotiations. What was Israel supposed to do? Well, one thing Israel did a little more than a decade later in 1978 was to give the entire Sinai Peninsula, an area of land bigger than Israel itself and with oil, back to Egypt because Egypt, under new leadership, signed a peace agreement with Israel.
Jerks. That was 78. Time and time again, the Jewish people show, we want peace. We don't want land. We're not trying to take over the Middle East like some religions are. The track record is quite clear. Why are we seeing these protests in the street of people claiming that we should nuke Israel? No kidding. I got the footage of it from Fort Lauderdale, that later. Why is nobody aware of history?
So Israel gave land for the promise of peace with Egypt, and it has always been willing to do the same thing with the Palestinians. All the Palestinians have ever had to do is recognize Israel as a Jewish state and promise to live in peace with it.
In other words, just don't kill them. Not acceptable. Never, ever acceptable.
But when Israel has proposed trading land for peace, as it did in 2000, when it agreed to give the Palestinians a sovereign state in more than 95% of the West Bank and all of Gaza, the Palestinian leadership rejected the offer and instead responded by sending waves of suicide terrorists into Israel. Meanwhile, Palestinian radio, television, and school curricula remain filled with glorification of terrorists, demonization of Jews, and the daily repeated message that Israel should cease to exist.
Sounds like the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I don't know if you caught that or not. Freedom From Religion Foundation, Dan Barker, and his unfortunately growing cast of characters from Madison, Wisconsin, now have won a lawsuit, I believe it was in Orlando. They have petitioned the judge that as long as Christians can hand out Bibles, then therefore the atheists can hand out their atheistic literature. Terrific. What does the atheistic literature read? Oh, that Christianity is bad. Jesus didn't really add much teaching. He wasn't really a good teacher at all. And if he was omniscient, why didn't he, for instance, tell us more about medicine so people's lives could be saved? It's a bunch of nonsense. It's typical. It's just Class A Dan Barker academia, which is basically B-roll for any serious scholar. Ludicrous, but it's now being allowed into the schools. You mean the schools that really were the ideas of, you know, Christians to educate people so they could, you know, read the Bible? We now can pass out anti-Christian literature in those schools. Good thinking, Judge. Good thinking. The only reason that you, Judge, have the type of court you do is because of Christian concepts, biblical principles. And now, in Israel, they continue to fight the war against the Palestinians, don't like that name, who continue to teach their children that Jews are horrible. They are disgusting. They're money grubbers. They are bad people. They want to kill you. Do we have any proof of that? No. just the opposite.
So it's not hard to explain the Middle East dispute. One side wants the other dead. The motto of Hamas, the Palestinian rulers of Gaza, is, "We love death as much as the Jews love life."
Mm-hmm.
There are 22 Arab states in the world, stretching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean. There is one Jewish state in the world, and it is about the size of New Jersey. In fact, tiny El Salvador is larger than Israel.
And yet they've got to have it. They've got to have it. Here's a proposition for you to consider. What would happen if, let's just say, over in the Middle East, there was a deal that got cut, that they decided, hey, let's just try something kind of new?
Think about these two questions. If tomorrow Israel laid down its arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? And if the Arab countries around Israel laid down their arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? In the first case, there would be an immediate destruction of the state of Israel.
Yep.
And mass murder of its Jewish population.
Mm-hmm.
In the second case, there would be peace the next day.
That's right. You cannot argue with that. If everybody just laid down their arms, everything would be just fine. If just the Jews laid down their arms, they would be slaughtered. If the Muslims laid down their arms and stopped, they would live in peace too. Don't forget, by the way, if you think that Israel is so anti-Islamic, why do they actually have Muslims in the Knesset? Why do they actually educate Muslims? Do you know that Muslims can actually enlist into the Israeli army? And they do, and they fight. Did you know that? Does it go the other way? Absolutely not.
As I said at the outset, it is a simple problem to describe. One side wants the other dead. And if it didn't, there would be peace.
Simple as that. Now, perhaps you have heard me lamenting this term Palestine. Here's why.
There has never been a state in the geographic area known as Palestine that was not Jewish. Israel is the third Jewish state to exist in that area. There was never an Arab state, never a Palestinian state, never a Muslim or any other state.
Other than Jewish people living in the land that we should refer to as Israel. Now, let me take you to Fort Lauderdale, to a group of peaceful Muslims who are out in the streets protesting the horrible Jews. Did you catch that? This, I presume, Muslim woman, and because she's wearing a hijab, that's a tell, screaming to Jewish people, "Go back to the oven, you need a big oven." Let me tell you something. Of all the nasty things that the Westboro Baptists have said, I'm not sure anything comes close to that.
That's
seriously. Nice. I know they've said plenty of offensive things about individuals. That just takes it right there. Now, if Christians had said something like this, oy, oy, oy. But a Muslim says it, and not a problem.
Your mother's whore! Your mother's whore! You loser! Get yourself! Knock knock Israel! Knock knock Israel! There is no Israel! There is no Israel!
Well, I would like to suggest to you there is no Palestine, but what she's saying is I don't want to recognize Israel as a state. That's the problem. One side wants the other dead. Now, the guy who was leading that chant, he had kind of a head covering on and a beard. Right now, though, the kids standing behind, well, they look like they're wearing, you know, the flat brim caps. They look all hip and groovy and cool. These would be your peaceful Muslims living in Fort Lauderdale. This is December 30th, 2008. They've got that Ricky Fowler golf cap on. Cool clothes and chanting.
Go to
peaceful, these are the peaceful Muslims that we've been told. Now you say, Friel, that's 2008. Do you got anything more current? Okay, this is Fort Lauderdale 2014.
Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine! 1, 2, 3, 4! 1, 2, 3, 4!
By the way, I'm looking at an Islamic woman. She's not even wearing a hijab. Is she? What is her sign?
Israel is a
terrorist state, says the sign of this peaceful Muslim living in Fort Lauderdale. These are the peaceful Muslims. Jews, remember, they're saying in Arabic, the army of Muhammad will return. Long live Palestine. Takbir. Allahu Akbar. Nothing to worry about, folks. Move along. This is Wretched Radio.
Pornography is an epidemic, and no one's immune. Men, women, children, pastors. Anyone can be affected. And the epidemic is growing. If you can't break the porn addiction, get Slaying the Dragon. We believe this CD has two principles that everyone needs to hear to slay the dragon of pornography. Why put your career, your family, even your soul at risk? Don't let porn win. Get Slaying the Dragon now at WretchedRadio.com.
Okay, so when I go in there for judgment, I need how many points to get into heaven?
1,000.
Should be, no problem. I was a good husband. How many points do you think I'll get for that?
Oh, 2.
2? Well, how much for being a doctor? Now, I saved lives.
3 points.
That's it? What about the time I ran into that burning house to save a kitten?
That was good.
And?
2 points.
But I could have died.
2 points.
I banked a lot on that stupid cat.
I'm sorry.
So, to get into heaven, I need...
1,000 points.
And I have...
7. It's time for you to go in now.
No, wait a minute. I'm a pretty good fellow. If all I get is 7 points, how does anyone get into heaven?
They don't take the test.
What? Now, why not?
Because they know they don't meet God's standards.
Then how do they get into heaven?
They've asked Jesus to take the test for them. They get in on his score, not theirs.
Are you putting your faith in what you can do or accomplish? Or are you putting your faith in God? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
If your marriage is good, it can be richer. If your marriage is hurting, it can be healed. And if your marriage is on the brink of disaster, it can be saved. Wretched Radio's Drive-By Marriage. 33 15-minute talks that will enhance, heal, or even rescue your marriage. No, I'm not kidding. So get your copy of Wretched Radio's Drive-By Marriage. Available with study guide at wretchedradio.com.
Now here's a clip of one of our favorite pastors here at Wretched Radio. This is Matt Chandler.
I'm just a man and Lauren's just a girl. I'm just a man. Lauren cannot complete me, cannot fulfill me, cannot make sense of my world. And to expect her to is to put pressure on her that she will be unable to carry, will be unable to sustain, and will be unable to bring any of those things into my life, which will create in me an anger towards her for not doing what she was never designed to do, created to do, or able to do to begin with. So when a woman says, this man will complete me, this man will make sense of my world, this man will make me know who I am, this man will heal my wounds, this man, you are putting weight on a man that he will be unable to sustain. It will only be a matter of time before he develops hobbies to get out from under that expectation. He cannot carry it. Put your hope in God, not men.
Rightly dividing the Word of God is something every Christian should strive for. That's why we offer you Herman Hu. Hermeneutics. In just 75 minutes, the Herman Hu DVD gives you a condensed 16-week master's level education on how to read the Bible rightly. And once you've learned, grab that DVD and your handy-dandy study guide and teach others. With Herman Hu, you'll never read the Bible the same way again, and you won't get fooled by false teachers. Herman Hu with study guide is available now at WretchedRadio.com.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the Advocate. When we as God's redeemed people sin, Jesus is our advocate before the Father. It is on the basis of Christ's righteousness that we are saved, not our own works. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
So much for our kumbaya moment. This is Wretched Radio. Tried. Failed. Tried. But that's okay. I offered an olive branch, and I don't mind getting my little wrist slapped. It's okay. I'll get over it now.
That wasn't an olive branch. That was an ambush.
Yeah, it kind of was. Did I mention this is Wretched Radio? He didn't buy any of it. Alrighty,
nope.
Then, just fine. By the way, I did take a look at the murder rate in Mexico. Now, that's the only crime that I looked up was murder rate because I didn't have more time than that. But during the break, I looked it up. Specifically, this is according to USA Today, so you can just take that to the bank. In Mexico, there is one out of every 8,300 residents is violently murdered in Mexico. In the United States, it would be one murder per 20,000. So what would that be, about 2.5 times the murder rate in Mexico versus the United States? So in other words, all of Mexico is basically, what's that part of Los Angeles?
Chicago.
Yeah, well, Chicago, that's
Compton?
For sure. That is just, you know, somebody, I think it was my wife, that's not somebody, that's my wife, told me that they're not recording the number of murders that are happening in Chicago. No, you mean they might be cooking
the books? They're budging the books?
A little bit. I can't believe Compton. That's
Compton,
Los Angeles. Yeah. That's apparently what Mexico is basically like all over the place. Pretty much. Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's all right. Sending your kids. I wouldn't go there. On a vacation account. You wouldn't go, but you'd send your kids there.
Oh, sure.
Sure. That's right. You'd send illegal kids there. That's clear.
Well, only if they lived in Mexico.
Hey, how's about that Hobby Lobby? Is the fun going to ever end for them?
No.
Did you report this for your news? Transgender files a complaint against Hobby Lobby for denying use of the women's restroom.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. A Hobby Lobby.
So they don't want guys going in the women's bathroom is what you're saying?
Well, depends on what you mean by guy is.
Genetically a guy.
Well, details.
Bad.
A Hobby Lobby store in Illinois is facing a discrimination complaint after a transgender employee, because you know why? It's a war on anybody who's not a white Christian male at the Hobby Lobby. I was thinking, somebody should do a bit. If there was a Christian Saturday Night Live, it could be something like inside of the home of the Green family, and they're sitting at a kitchen table, and a Papa Green and the son, Steve Green, not to be confused with the singer, sitting at the table, and they're there with their wives, and the wives get up, and they're having pleasant chit-chat, having orange juice, some with pulp, some without, and then the girls get up and announce, well, we've got a busy Saturday, off to the mall we go, and then they look to make sure that they're out the door, and then as soon as the girls, you can hear the door slam, the two Greens would say, oh, I thought they'd never leave. I hate those women. Oh, being married to them for all these years just so we could fool the world that we like them when we really have a war against them. Suddenly the kids come running in, and two of the kids are girls. And so they play nice with the boys and with the girls. But then as soon as they send the kids, hey, kids, why don't you go out to the backyard and play? The door slams. Oh, I like the boy kids. But those girl children we had to have just to fool the world into believing we like women when we have a war on them. I thought it could make a pretty interesting skit. Because, you know, that Green family, how they hate the women.
Oh, yeah.
The store in Illinois is facing a discrimination complaint after a transgender employee was told that he may not use the women's restroom until he has reconstructive surgery to switch from male to female reproductive organs. See, I don't even... Would you, at that... Okay, just because they're... See, the whole...
No, they're not, because you can't when you're, you know...
This is why I don't mind telling you. While I understand the expense, believe me, I get it. having gay facilities for bathrooms or locker rooms. I get that. The employee, get ready for this, you haven't heard the punchline yet, who goes by the name Megan Somerville, also professes to be a Christian. Oh, that's great. This issue is one that is not going away, and I just can't help but think, poor Hobby Lobby, people are queuing up to take a shot at that poor family in their business, who, by the way, pays more than the recommended or almost demanded minimum wage that the government wants to use to completely goof up an economy. Hey, this is exciting. Well, oh, I wonder if we just missed this show. Or is this on tonight? Brand new show on MTV. This is very, very exciting. Called Virgin Territory. This has nothing to do with the Virgin Islands. This has to do with 15 young adults between the ages of 18 and 23 who, for various reasons, are still virgins. It's about, for various reasons, they're not married. During the course of the series, at least some of those featured will lose their virginity. Why? Because we hold nothing in high esteem in this country. Absolutely
nothing.
Nothing. Competing against their other hits, 16 and Pregnant and The Real World, the network says Virgin Territory. Joey, why is MTV creating this TV show about young people losing their virginity? I think you can guess what their motive is, so they say.
Money? Oh, to start a conversation.
That's exactly right, to start. They believe it will help facilitate important conversations among young people about safe sex and preventing pregnancy. Or maintaining
abstinence?
No.
Actually, they are. These people have been abstaining, and it's despicable.
And we're going to make fun of it and make money. I mean, start important conversations about it. Which leads us to Jonathan Pakluda. That's right. Pakluda, P-O-K-L-U-D-A, 10 Ways to Ruin Your Life in Your 20s. If you happen to be a young person and you would like to thrash your life, here are some helps. Number one, believe that ideas don't have consequences. That's right. Proverbs 14:15, the simple believe anything, but the prudent give thought to their steps. Young person, your parents have been around the block at least once. They know that certain behaviors have certain consequences or a higher likelihood of bad consequences. Listen to them. Number two, if you'd like to wreck your life in your 20s, live outside your means. That's right. Just go ahead and spend more than what you've got. Get lots of credit cards. Take out lots of loans. Or just go to college. Proverbs 22:7, the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is slave to the lender. Does that mean you can never borrow money? No, I don't believe that. I do not believe that a secured loan is a violation of this principle. Speculative lending, bad idea. Borrowing when you have no way to back it up or on a promise that you're going to possibly get a job where you could, nope. Borrowing money to buy a house, I don't believe that's a sin. It's collateralized. Anything short of that, sinful. Feed an addiction, you'll wreck your life. Alcohol, money, drugs, porn, shopping, whatever. Proverbs 11:6, the righteousness of the upright delivers them, but the unfaithful are trapped by evil desires. If you would like to ruin your life, lickety-split, you could go on an MTV show and run with fools. That's what you will become if you run with a fool. A fool yourself. Hang around with wise people, you'll become wise. Hang around with godly people, you'll become godlier. Hang around with knuckleheads, and you're going to become brilliant? Doesn't work that way. Run with bad friends. I think it was Steve Lawson who recently tweeted, tell me who your friends are. Show me your friends. Introduce me to your friends. And I'll tell you where you're going to be in 20 years. True. Now, you're young. And you think, no, not for me. See, here's the problem. The Proverbs do not read like this. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Except with one person in the 21st century. Otherwise, this proverb is true of everybody except one person in the 21st century. It's not the way it's written. Walk with the wise and become wise. For a companion of fools suffers harm. Proverbs 13:20, no exceptions. The company that you keep will determine where you are going. Are you saying I should never have pagan friends? Didn't say that. But if they are your best buddies, if they are your constant companions, if they are the people with whom you spend a lot of time, you're in trouble. You're just in danger. Am I supposed to only hang out with Christians? Not only, but predominantly, yes. Sue the Bible. It's wisdom. It's just, this is how life is anyway. This is, why does life work this way and the Proverbs reflect it? No. It's this, the life reflects what the Proverbs teach. If you run with a bunch of criminals, you're going to become a criminal. Simple as that. If you want to ruin your life in your 20s, number five, carelessly give away your heart. That's right. Above all else, guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it. That would be your Proverbs 4:23. Guard your heart. Do not give it away. How can you do that? You're thinking straight away. You're thinking about a boyfriend or a girlfriend. There are more ways to give away your heart than just with a boy or girl. You can give away your heart to stuff. You can give away your heart to a career. You can give away your heart to friends, to sports, drama, you name it. You can give away your heart. Guard your heart. This is why John, this maybe seems weird, that you've read John, was it 2nd or 3rd John? Little children, so this is a remark to people that are loved by somebody who loves them. Little children, guard your heart against idols. Why? Because as John Calvin rightly stated, our hearts are idol factories. And you can give your heart away to things, dumb things, good things. Doesn't matter, you give your heart away. But most likely you will give away your heart to a boy or to a girl. And it will get hurt. And you will ruin your life in your 20s or teens. Number six, tolerate evil. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. He hates pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. Proverbs 8:13. God hates evil. We hate it. Don't tolerate evil. Don't let yourself get slowly watered down by evil. Don't start to fall for the lies. Little ones. Little ones. Not so little ones. Not so little. Kind of a big one. But, whoa, that's a whopper. And you go, how did I get here? Because you tolerated a little in the beginning. Number seven, if you want to wreck your life in your 20s, make secondary things ultimate and ultimate things secondary. Jonathan Pecluda writes, if an outsider were to observe how you spend your time and resources, what would they say your life is about? Making money? Looking fabulous? Fantasy football? Would they say you worship God? Or worship a 60-inch HD TV? What is most important in your life? Working. Working out. Having hobbies. Good things, if you don't go overboard, but they should all be at least secondary, tertiary, fourth place. Keep falsehoods and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God. Proverbs 30:8-9. You want to wreck your life? Believe that this life is all about you. Number eight, because pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Live for immediate gratification. The wise store up choice food and olive oil, but food gulps down but fools gulp their food down. And if you really want to wreck your life, avoid accountability. Proverbs 12:1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid. It's a Hebrew word that means stupid. But that's only if you want to wreck your life in your 20s. Otherwise, you could learn from the Proverbs. This is Wretched Radio.
Odds are you spend a ton of time in your car, between work and church and kids and errands. It's just how we roll these days. That's where Drive-By Theology comes in. While you travel here and there, hither and yon, you can listen to 48 theology lessons in nice drive-time chunks. Todd and Pastor Bob Glenn will bring you a rock-solid theological foundation, redeeming your time on the road. Get your copy today of Drive-By Theology and check the entire Drive-By series at wretchedradio.com.
Precious one, what keeps us from really being used of God? A lack of education? Who we are? The damage that was done to us? Our circumstances? No, if it were, the circumstances of our lives and the action of others would limit God's power and dilute His promises. Beloved, in any circumstance, Jesus is the only answer, the only solution. Listen to 1 John 5, 3 and 4 carefully. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. And dear friend, the one who overcomes the world is the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. This is Kay Arthur with Precepts from God's Word.
Here at Wretched Radio, we like to sprinkle the donut of hard truth with a little humor. Okay, lousy metaphor aside, it's Wretched Shtick, and it should give your funny bone a workout. You'll hear from longtime sponsors like Larinex and Marginal Landscaping, worship CDs from Sean Connery, John Bon Jovi and others, news stories, sermon series, and a whole lot more. Yes, it's Wretched. Yes, it's Shtick. That would make it Wretched Shtick. It's downloadable now at wretchedradio.com.
The Makings of a Human. This is Ken Ham, a publisher of the award-winning family magazine, Answers. This week we've learned that so-called cavemen had all the traits of human beings. They used tools, they wore clothes, and were even artists. What's more, genetics confirms that their DNA was almost identical to ours. So why is it important to understand that cavemen were just humans who lived in caves? Well, the book of Genesis tells us that the entire human race descended from Adam and Eve just 6,000 years ago. And you know, cavemen show all the same characteristics as the first humans in the Bible. You see, our ancestors may have looked a little different than us, but they weren't less evolved brutes. They were humans with variations, just like we see in the rest of God's creation.
Find out more about the true origin of man and the full-size ark we're building at our website, answersingenesis.org. Visit answersingenesis.org.
Every Christian experiences doubt to some degree about their salvation. But where is the line between doubt and unbelief? If you fear that you might not actually be a Christian, join Todd and Pastors R.W. Glenn and Brian Hedges as they gently lead you through the process of examining yourself to see if you're in the faith, to know that you're saved, to know that you're a child of God. Get your copy of Assurance, Know That You're Saved, from WretchedRadio.com.
Important dates in Christian history. 385 AD. In Milan, Bishop Ambrose defies the Empress. This event helped to establish the precedent of the Church confronting the state when necessary to protect Christian teaching and oppose injustice and corruption in government. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Joey, are most of the beep talks about immigration? Just kind of curious.
Three-fifths. So 60% is most, yes.
Okay, so we could wait just because the immigration horse has been ridden and beaten today. So maybe could they wait until Monday?
The horse stakes are being punched and beaten as we speak.
I see that. Thank you. This is Wretched Radio. Don't forget 1-877-282-BEEP when you have questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks. Just call the Beep Talk number, and we will likely use it as long as you don't swear, my atheist friends. 1-877-282-BEEP. Read an interesting article by one Jeff Thomas. Jeff Thomas, title, A Child Was Bored in the Service. Okay, it caught my attention, so I started reading. And he was, I think, providing some interesting insights about how our aversion to boredom might indeed be affecting the way that we do church. You listen, you be the judge. He writes, the prevailing ecclesiastical situation today in which many consider the worst sin a church can commit is to bore children. I think that's true of adults, too. The service can't be boring. It can't be slow. It can't lag. It has to pace. Now, here's how this shows up. Lots of different ways. The the more subtle ones are making sure that people know their cue when to start walking onto the platform so that there's no downtime when somebody's walking onto the platform. So when somebody, okay, this is the last line of my prayer, be moving toward the platform so you can be there as soon as I say amen, because then, boom, you can start talking. Because if we have about 4 or 5 seconds of just nothing, it's really awkward, and people get bored, and we lose them. That's how it can show up. Now, I'm not saying that's a sin to run it efficiently, not saying that. But he's suggesting that maybe our desire, just to, because we're trying to hat-tip people's short attention, that we're doing some stuff that maybe we shouldn't be doing, he continues. Yet is not the routine and dull pattern of much of our toil the very life which all mankind must face, especially people in the third world? We shall be ill-equipped for living if we do not come armed and trained to be bored much of the time. Huh. Many of the hours fathers spend at work are boringly repetitive. While the work mothers, they can tell you, the regimen of chores is tedious. And you've got to get used to that, because that's what life is, and it's not constantly whoop-dee-doo. That's what motivated me to start writing this letter that you'll probably get next week if you have signed up for the newsletter. Just, what is boredom? What is it? Is it sinful? Is it always wrong? Does it always have to be wrong? Does it have to be sinful? I think there's a line. I think there's times when it can be sinful. When it's like, I'm bored. What is that? We do well, anytime we have an emotion, to take the time to go, what is going on with that emotion? From whence does that feeling come? What is the cause of my feeling like that? And that'll help you deal with it. Could be sinful, might not be. Is he on to something here? That we would do well to start teaching our kids to be bored? Could it be that this is why we see such incessant cell phone usage? People just, they just can't, I can't sit still for a second. I mean, I've got to do something. I can't eat a meal with my family. What if nobody says anything while we're passing the salad? I got to be on the phone. I got to be texting somebody. I got to be checking in with my emails. Could it be that it just feeds the proclivity that we have to never, ever be bored? He continues, we have lost any idea that austerity, not unremitting poverty, but a decent restraint might actually be of benefit to children. It is not easy for the body of Christ to preach self-denial and cross-bearing in the midst of a frenzied spending spree. It has become a disaster for many congregations, especially in the U.S. of A. The amount of money that people spend for entertainment for kids, that we spend for entertainment for ourselves, is all entertainment wrong? No. But if we have to be entertain constantly because I can't be alone with my thoughts. We no longer expect children to endure boredom for a second. I think the same thing is true with us. A.N. Wilson wrote, Pascal, Blaise Pascal, said that all human trouble stemmed... Okay, now this is in... Okay, that's a big sentence. All human trouble stems from this. That's a big statement. See if you agree or not. All human trouble stems from our inability to sit quietly in one room. I'm not sure I'd be willing to go that far, but he was a smarter guy than I am, certainly. But let's just say that it's even hyperbole. Can you sit alone quietly in a room? When you're in the waiting room, do you have to read the magazines? Do you have to be on your phone? Now look, redeeming the time. I get that, but that's let's be careful here that we don't suddenly become monastics or aesthetics. I'm not saying that. But can you just sit? When you're in the doctor's room waiting, can you just sit? Or do you fidget and wait and think, oh, I should have grabbed a magazine from out there because I just can't do... Almost an anxiousness about us where we have to be doing something lest we go mad? Ann Wilson says, if he was right, then we have serious trouble ahead with an extraordinarily restless, vacuous generation of human individuals waiting to take over the world. The lesson of how to be bored must be learnt if the child is to grow up sane, and this is for two reasons. Number one, human life, human existence consists of boredom. Few jobs are interesting all of the time. And even those jobs that are interesting all of the time, you give it enough time and they become mundane. Anything does. And that, by the way, is a hint as to why I don't think all boredom is necessarily sinful. We're human beings. We're creative because God's creative. We work because God works. And so if something just becomes repetitious, we get used to it. It's not fresh. It's not exciting. And we can get bored with it. I think that is one of the reasons why God has given us such an amazing book. Great stories, varied literature, not just didactic, but historical narratives, poetry, apocalyptic, exciting, wars, all kinds of romantic intrigue, spies, lots of things going on to keep our interest, because we're humans and we need that as creative people. Now, having said that, what do you do when you get bored? What do you do when your job is tedious? Does that mean you can never change jobs? Didn't say that. Move on to something else. It's guarding against being sinfully bored.
I hate this. I wish I had a different job. I wish I could go to somebody's house.
And that goes for school. Goes for summer vacation for the kids.
Oh, I hate summer vacation.
You mean the thing that you were longing for a month ago? Oh, yeah, I remember that. Isn't that the truth? I mean, we did it too, by the way. We longed for summer vacation. Summer vacation came here. And then you started crabbing at your mother. I'm so bored. Okay. Sinful boredom versus unsinful boredom. The second reason that we got to get used to boredom, he writes, out of what feels like boredom comes the capacity to be inward. Now, I would actually tweak that. Maybe it comes the capacity to not just be inward, but to overuse an overused word, spiritual, to do spiritual things, to use boredom to take the time to go, how am I doing? How am I thinking about life? How am I leading my life? How am I following the Savior? How am I doing with my spiritual disciplines? Can I even use my boredom time for spiritual disciplines? It's a chance to grow and to think. And no, I'm not going to use the Bible verse, be still and know that I am God, because I don't think that's what is going on there. It's cease striving. Quit trying to do everything yourself. Know that I am God. I'm sovereign, not you. Not be still and listen for a still small voice. But can you be quiet at all with your thoughts? People used to be. Which should be a little bit of a reminder that while we are so quick to judge pretty much everything, including people who are long dead, who had way more time on their hands to ponder deep thoughts, maybe, just maybe, they knew a little bit more than we did. As we look back at the Reformers, they had less distractions than we do. Do you really think they didn't think through some of these things? You know, the generations before us that maybe built your church that you've radically changed, or you can't stand anymore because it's not a worship center? Maybe they put some thought into some of these things, and before we tear down traditions, recognizing the people who instituted those things probably spent more time thinking, writing, pondering, studying than we do. I think it's pretty obvious when you take a look at the way things were written 200 years ago. Well, for instance, how's about this church in Alabama? You know, I first read this story and I thought, let every church do what every church wants to do. Every church can do whatever they want to do. I'm not there. I don't know their situation. I don't know how they prayed. I don't know where the money came from. Headline, mega church features 12-lane bowling alley, climbing wall, basketball court, and more. And my initial reaction is, oh, brother. Then I thought, wait a second, oh, brother. How do I know what's going on there? Maybe everybody put their money. Maybe all of these people in this congregation said, you know, we've added it up. The amount of money that we spend bowling, if we simply build a bowling alley inside of the church, we'll have it paid for in 3 years, and then we'll all save money and we can give more money to missions. Could have happened. I don't know. Do you know? I don't. It's possible. Same thing with the climbing wall. Maybe they said, hey, look, here's what we can do with the climbing wall and a basketball court. We'll build this stuff. That way, parents who can't afford to go out and do stuff because they've got the kids, they can't afford a babysitter, which is now crazy money per hour, we'll build it. They can come on Friday nights and save money, and then they can have a healthier family life. And they'll love church, and everybody will be happy in the family, and it'll actually be cheaper for our people. Maybe. I don't know. Does it have to be a sin that a church does this stuff? Does it have to be? I don't think it does. And then I read the quotes by the pastor. Said that the leisure activities will draw more people to the church. We believe we can really meet the needs of the community. It will bring people from the world to the kingdom. That's not what a church is supposed to be. A church is supposed to be for believers. So if you build this stuff for believers inside of the church, that's one thing. Building it to be an entertainment complex for the world so that they'll come to go bowling and stay for Jesus? Yeah. The domes also house a teen dance club. Now, that way, they'll have a place to do their latest dopey video. That's good. And a nightclub for adults. Cool. A banquet hall, indoor playground, and a lookout tower. Over 70 feet tall. It's like Siena. Quote from the pastor, when people walk in that building, they'll be inspired. You know, we used to be inspired by biblical images, Bible verses, soaring angles, cathedral ceilings. That's what used to inspire us. Now apparently it's nightclubs, climbing towers, and bowling alleys. I want kids to walk in this facility and dream. Dream about what exactly?
Bowling.
Apparently, yeah, good. Bowling. They could. No, they don't have to dream about bowling. They can just go right down the aisle, no pun intended, and they can go right down the hall, and they can actually do bowling. There's no dreaming there. Dream what? This is what my house can be someday? Okay. Normally wouldn't critique, but when I hear that's their motive, yeah, that's a problem. We didn't do church that way before. Why didn't they used to do church that way before? I think it's because old dead guys thought about these things. And I'm not saying they were right about everything, but it takes a certain kind of arrogance to suggest we know more than they do when they took more time because they were distracted, and when they got bored, they were willing to go, I'm not going to waste this time. I'm going to open up my Bible and study. I'm not going to waste this time. I'm going to pray. I'm not going to waste this time. I'm going to evangelize. I'm not going to waste this time. I'm going to volunteer at my church. I'm not going to waste this time. I'm going to think about things that I can do for my family that will grow them in their love for the Lord. Hey. Hey. Just thinking, maybe if you're bored, those would be some things that you could do. Then, having learned the lessons of boredom ourselves, we could teach our children so that they do not practice sinful boredom, and maybe, just maybe, studying their Bibles like kids used to. Just maybe. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.